It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Follier here. I'm back. Can't wait to talk about Windows. The Windows update that came out yesterday, the first kind of blob update. We'll talk about whether Microsoft even needs Windows anymore. And yes, Gears of War 4. It's all coming up next. Sorry, Mary Jo, on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Follier, episode 487, recorded Wednesday, October 12th, 2016. Borking as a service. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you could post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/ww and use the code WW30. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Follier. I have missed you, fellas. It's been... my name is Father Robert Ballasaire. I'm the digital Jesuit. No, but thank you to Robert. I think Robert filled in once and Megan filled in once. Is that right? Actually, I missed three shows. Yeah,
yeah, so Padre was twice.
If I'm not mistaken, Padre is in Rome meeting his maker.
Is he a robot? He is meeting his maker. He is in Rome. Isn't that amazing? The Jesuit Synod or something. They do this every 500 years. Anyway, yeah, lucky guy. So I guess it's just you and me then. In that case, we can't invoke Father Robert's name today. But did anything happen while I was gone?
Not really.
No. Pretty quiet.
Did anything happen?
Nothing remarkable.
Well, there was an announcement that there's going to be an event. Remember the last time I was here, there was speculation Microsoft might do a fall event. Where is the event? Is it in your neck of the woods?
It is. It's in New York.
Do we know what kind of event it is?
There seems to be some debate about that.
Yeah.
Well,
some speculation.
Are they going to announce the new iPad? No.
No.
We know that much.
No.
But I guess the question is it a hardware event? Because, I mean, isn't that what we're wondering? I mean, it seems like, when did they announce? It's more than a year since they announced the Surface Book and the.
Yeah, the Surface Book announcement was a year ago this past week.
Oh, okay. So it was exactly
right around this time of year.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, we do know at least one thing. They're going to announce the new version of Microsoft Paint.
that's a good guess.
That's exciting.
They could.
That's exciting.
Their invitation is very cryptic. I can't figure out what it's supposed to mean. It says on it, imagine what you'll do. And it's sometimes flipped to face you, and sometimes it's flipped to be in a mirror image.
Ooh.
And you're looking out a window, I think, in New York, where the event probably is going to be held.
That sounds like HoloLens, right?
Yeah.
And there were some rumors that they might have some updates on HoloLens, right? Or no?
I don't know. I think we're expecting... I mean, I would be surprised if they showed off HoloLens. I love talking about it. But I don't think we're expecting actual updates, right? Until possibly WinHack or later.
I mean, you know, what they might do... I figure at this event, they'll start peeling back the covers on Redstone 2. And so one of the things we think we're pretty sure will be in Redstone 2 is they bring the Windows holographic shell to Windows 10, right? So that's how HoloLens could fit in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my expectation. I think it's going to be the first kind of public discussion about Redstone 2.
Redstone 2
fill me in.
So like the version fourth. Of Windows 10 due in spring of 2017. It's the next big one that'll have new features.
So the anniversary update was Redstone 1?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
That's right.
Can I? Is it too early to say the much maligned anniversary update? Because I feel maligned.
Actually, you're late to that party,
Leo. Well, I'll give you an example. There was a big Patch Tuesday yesterday. This is the first big bundle Patch Tuesday. We'll talk about it in a bit, but this is not a computer that's been modified horrifically. I'm not on the beta or anything, and I can't update. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. But I just
can you use the keyboard?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? You're all set.
Some people can't.
That's a problem that plagues Surface Book right now.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get back to October event, then we'll talk about the update because I know that's coming too.
All right.
So Redstone 2.
Yep. I think they'll show off Redstone 2, talks about some of the major features in Redstone 2. And then we're kind of going back and forth if they'll show off the Surface All-in-One there or not. There are rumors they will. I've heard some people say they don't think they will. There also, I am thinking, is a hardware showcase attached to this, which will have mostly OEM devices. But I kind of think they're going to show the All-in-One.
I do too. Yeah. I've not heard explicitly, but I've been told from some sources, no Surface Phone, no Surface Book 2, no Surface Pro 5.
Mm-mm. No band, we already know.
What do you think about this little, it's kind of a fanboy theory type thing. Assuming the May date is correct on Surface Book 2 and Surface Pro 5, does it even make sense for them to rev the current generation of those devices with KB, or I guess it's Kaby Lake processors, right? Just do a refresh with the existing hardware. Does that even make sense?
I know.
I don't think it does, but...
I know. I've heard some people say, of course they're going to do that. And then I've heard some people say, of course they're not going to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a little more engineering than people may believe. And it makes me wonder, why would you do that for a six-month run? Or even not even a six-month run, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So we don't really know how big a hardware component there will be to this launch.
Right.
The rumors before we knew for sure that it was October 26th was this was going to be an all-in-one debut. But that's not really enough to do a whole event around. So I'm sure they're going to, you know, have Redstone 2 be kind of the star of the event and then have the hardware showcase. And probably if they do show off the all-in-one, show it kind of as a secondary thing, not making it the star of the event.
And Surface Phone, here it comes. Are we excited?
I saw Sasquatch
using one as he got on the UFO.
That's kind of a needling thing to ask. I apologize.
It is.
Sega is also going to re-enter the video game hardware market. and BOS is back.
Yay, BOS. Okay. All right. So, and you guys are both going. Is it at the old post office? Where is it?
So, actually, I might not be going, Leo.
Oh, why not?
Both of us are flying to Las Vegas that evening.
Oh, my God. That's right. I forgot. There was the conflict. Yeah.
For me to change my plans, aside from the expense of it, would just be complex and tiring. And I'm not they're going to live stream it.
Yeah, you don't need to go. I'm increasingly feeling like being at these events or conferences even is less and less important because everything's streamed now. All the, you know, CES, I've never understood why CES even exists anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
And we're trying to decide our calendar for next year for sending crews and reporters to events. And I just feel like year after year, it becomes less and less important to be at these events. But I don't know, you know. It's maybe different for you, and you're there, Perry Joe. It's down the street.
Oh, yeah. I'll go for sure. I'll be there.
There's
for
the hands-on. If there's a hands-on, that's fine.
Well, Perry Joe, if this thing was in Dedham, I would go too. But you know, I just
would you know?
It,
would
it's
you?
Just the
it's the in Dedham. Of it. When is Microsoft going to hold an event in Dedham? Damn it!
I know. When are they?
It's about time.
It's, what, I think it is.
What do they have against Paul Revere? I ask you.
You know, they could have like a little rally at the high school before one of the football games. It'd be fun.
All right. I do want to talk about the first Patch Tuesday update that's a monolithic update and how that's been going. I can tell you how it's been going for me. And then you've got a very provocative heading in here. Does Microsoft even need Windows anymore? I'm guessing that's a Paul Thurrott article at Thurrott.com. That's where you'll find Mr. T at Thurrott.com. And Paul, you can thank me later, but somebody called the radio show and said, what's a good book for Windows? I don't want a kiddie book. I know how to use computers. I just want a book that tells me how to use Windows 10. And I said, you know, I don't know this guy. I've never heard of him, but I think his field guide to Windows 10
shifty.
looks pretty darn good. And I sent him to leanpub.com.
Former Mac user.
Well, what recently. Is the reason why? Well, that's kind of what this guy was. He said, I left Windows for a generation or two, and I'm back. And I want to, I don't need an explanation of how to use a computer.
Right. How to use a mouse.
Yeah.
How to find the power button on the front of your computer.
I don't want that. I want to know how to use Windows 10 specifically.
You know what's worse than reading about that stuff, Leo?
What? Writing?
Writing about it.
Tap the key, the Windows key. That's the one with the logo.
Look down at your keyboard.
Look down.
You will see
to the
variety
left.
Of square-shaped things. One of them will have a shape on it.
Call this the, I hate my life, Windows key. Help me now. Kill me now.
Why so many writers kill themselves.
Yeah.
I think there's something to it.
Some people love that. Some people say, hey, you know, it's my bread and butter.
Sure.
And they say it just like that, my bread and butter. All right, let me talk about my bread and butter, if you don't mind, for just a moment. Actually, I know, Paul, you too, but you know, you really appreciate Audible when you come home from a long trip or you head out on a long trip. And I have to say, my phone was loaded with audiobooks from audible.com. It is the best place to go for audiobooks. It's the biggest, bestest audiobook store in the world. And I am not a Johnny come lately to this Audible thing. I've been an Audible.
Nope.
No siree. I started subscribing in the year 2000. They had just begun. In fact, this was the days that the iPod hadn't come out yet. They had to sell their own hardware, the Auto, just so you could listen to Audible. It's a lot easier now. There's Audible apps for every phone, every tablet, every operating system. The Windows app is phenomenal. Phenomenal. And I'm really a fan of all of these great audio books. You can listen anywhere. You can even listen on a Chromebook now. You can listen on the web. Go to Audible, AUDIBLE.com. So the other thing that's kind of fun, I mean, here I am in Russia, and I want to know more about Russia. And we had a lecturer on the boat who said there's a great book called The Romanovs that covers the entire Russian dynasty from, you know, Peter the Great's father, Alexei, in 1613, to the last
Alexei
czar.
The mediocre.
He was, by the way. there were like a couple of greats, Catherine and Peter, and the rest pretty horrible. But
a heartbeat.
I think Ivan the Terrible actually began the Ivan was
really.
No Ivan was no sweetheart either, let me tell you. you know, as it was, by the way, this is the greatest book ever. It's really, really long. Simon Seberg Montefiore wrote it. Audible book. It's great. You can get it for free right now if you go to audible.com/windows. But the thing that the reason I'm enjoying reading it right now is however bad you think the world situation is now, however bad you think governments are today, you have no idea.
Sure.
These czars were horrific. Even Peter the Great. I mean, between midget dwarf weddings to spitting babies, this thing, these people were horrific. But it's fascinating reading. Anyway, that's my recommendation. What have you been, and I listened to that for a lot of the trip. It was really fun. What are you I think you do the same thing, don't you, Paul? When you travel, you like to read history about the area. And,
oh, yeah.
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 What have you
I've got two right now that I'm going back and forth. I think I recommended one of these on a previous episode, but it might have been when you were gone. Just kind of keeping it in the industry somewhat. There's a book called Console Wars.
Oh, I love
this
book. I've read
it. Sega Genesis and Nintendo.
In fact, I interviewed the author. We have a triangulation.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Very,
it's funny.
Good.
The narrator is someone I've never heard of. His name is Fred Berman. He reminds me of Martin Sheen narrating in Apocalypse Now. He kind of sounds similar. It's weird. Like, if you think about that being the guy.
September 23rd, 1889, just weeks before his 30th birthday.
Wait a minute, 1889.
An entrepreneur named Fusajiro Yamauchi opened
they're talking about the history of Nintendo.
Is Nintendo, isn't it?
To attract the attention of passing rickshaws and wealthy
denizens. Doesn't he kind of sound like Martin Sheen?
Yeah, I like it.
Young Martin Sheen.
I like it. That's kind of something to consider when you're doing audiobooks. You're now no longer just talking about the author of the book. You're talking about the reader of the book. And this is where Audible really excels.
So I'm sorry to interrupt real quick, but there's a second one that I have to get out because it's so awesome.
Go ahead.
The French Chef in America.
Love
it. It's a sequel to Julia Child's book, My Life in France.
Yep, I'm reading My Life in France right now. It's awesome.
It's awesome. So this one just came out about a week ago, and it's read by the author, Alex Brudon.
Oh,
I think it's
nice.
Sort of the great nephew of Julia Childs, if I'm not mistaken. But he wrote he co-wrote the first one with her.
Right.
It's excellent. I'm only like an hour into it, but
I love My Life in France, and that's another one I read because we were going to Paris, and I like to read books around the places we're
going. I've listened to that one three times now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the deal. If you go to audible.com/windows, you're going to sign up for the gold account. That's a subscription. And really, the easiest way to do Audible is to get the subscription account. That's a book a month. You also get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times as part of your subscription. But you're not going to pay anything for the first month. You're just going to get basically experience the subscription without paying anything. If you cancel in the first 30 days, you pay nothing. But if you decide you want to keep going, you've had that, trial offer. But no matter what you decide to do, you keep the book. So essentially, you get a book that's free. Ooh, a new book about Hitler. Always looking for those, aren't we, Paul? Always enjoying those. This looks good. Have you seen this? This just came out. 34 hours, my friends. And this just covers the first 40, 50 years. Through 1939, up to the war. Wow. Wow. I'll tell you what. I love history, but I love fiction, science fiction. Audible.com/windows. The only challenge is picking that first book. At least it's
my wife makes fun of me for the World War II stuff.
I love that stuff.
I read a lot of these books. I listen to a lot of the audiobooks. I watch these documentaries all the time. Movies, whatever. And this is her standard. She'll kind of walk in if I'm watching something on TV, and she says, "Do you think this time they're going to win?"
She doesn't understand the value of watching a show in which you know exactly what's going to happen.
Yep. Yeah, right? Yeah. No, I think this time they're going to pull it out.
Yeah, might happen. Could be. There is a wonderful book by Philip K. Dick, The Man in the High Castle, which is all about what happens if we lose World War II.
Which is a decent Amazon TV series.
Decent, but read the book, which is more
it's not as good as the book.
Much more decent. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Audible, for your support of Windows Weekly. All right, now let's hit this provocative statement. Was I right and correct in thinking this might be a Paul Thurrott?
Well, so yes and no. I think it's Eric Knorr from InfoWorld wrote an article called "Microsoft."
Mary Jo's going,
"Yep."
Well, hold on a second. So I sort of flipped it around and put a question mark on it. And his take was
that Microsoft should just give up on Windows. It's over.
Right. Right.
Wow.
I think that's a little extreme.
Yeah.
But that said, I also think that a lot of the points he makes are valid, and I think that all of us, the three of us, would agree to a number of these points. You know, the Microsoft's future is in the cloud, et cetera, et cetera. So it's funny. I tried to look up, where Windows is today, revenue-wise, let's say, compared to where it was, 5 years ago or 10 years ago. It's difficult to compare these things because Microsoft doesn't tell us anymore, what the revenues are for Windows. But it's not hard to know that the PC industry has been falling badly, will continue to fall. that this is a legacy business. You know, that if you look at device penetration out in the market, PCs are low teens, you know, percentage-wise. That Windows, which used to be over 50% of Microsoft's revenues, that entire part of the business is probably somewhere in the 15% range, 20% at the highest. You know, the world has changed. I mean, it's not – you can't argue that the world has changed. It has. Of course it has. But the question is whether Microsoft needs – you know, needs is kind of a weird word, you know. But, you know, whether this thing is an ongoing concern today. And of course it is. I mean, of course it is. Windows is being improved every day, actually. And, you know, people like us, Mary Jo and I especially, and you too, rely on these kind of powerful workstation type computers to get, you know, compared to say like an iPad, to get work done, because we're writers or we're doing video work or whatever it is. And these are the types of tasks where a PC actually does excel. But I think there's, you know, but on the flip side, that's not a very usual thing for most people to do every day. And people use PCs for a lot longer than they used to. They don't buy new PCs very often. They'll often get most of what they need to do from a personal computing perspective done on a phone or a smartphone. And they'll sometimes go over to the PC to type, hammer out something like a long paper or print something or, you know, whatever it may be. So I think he's a little ahead of himself, but I mean, I think he's just expressed what we all need to understand is the reality that, you know, in the scheme of things, Windows and PCs are kind of on the downward end of that curve. You know, it doesn't mean they're going to drop off a cliff and disappear tomorrow. You know, horses didn't disappear when, you know, cars arrived or whatever, but their roles changed, you know, and I think that's absolutely the case with Windows and the PC.
Yeah, I feel like his article, the original InfoWorld article, wasn't saying anything we haven't been saying for years, right?
It just had a provocative headline.
Yeah, it did. And yeah. I think also a lot of people forget that Windows is still really important to Microsoft because it's still the platform businesses use, right? PCs may be waning in the grand scheme of the pool of all devices when you look at everything, phones and PCs and tablets together. But how does the world get work done? It's still a Windows PC for the most part.
Yeah. This is almost a Donald Trumpism, but I sort of think of, you know, PC users are like the doers, you know, they're the ones that get stuff done. And I sort of like that notion around the PC, but it's funny. I think that this enterprises being slow moving has kind of hurt Microsoft in some ways. Mm-hmm. In this case, I think it's kind of helping them, you know, like their inability to change, their lack of desire to change is a sort of inertia that kind of keeps the PC going. Probably for decades to come. Yeah.
Right. Plus, part of Microsoft's business model moving forward isn't just like get everybody to the cloud. They have the whole hybrid thing going. And they're also trying to monetize services that attach to Windows, like Xbox Live is one of them, and OneDrive at some point when that becomes more of a paid service, Skype.
Yeah.
So their business model doesn't just revolve around get rid of Windows and replace it with cloud. It's also this kind of interim part where you have services that attach to Windows.
And I think that thing you're describing is a hybrid strategy of a sort too. It's a different kind of a thing, but I don't know. You know, we've talked about this a lot. Microsoft still uses this figure, you know, 1.5 billion Windows PCs. I don't know. Are there? I mean, are there really? You know, I think I know Mary Jo will just kind of agree with this, because one of the things that's hard about what we do is as Microsoft changes as a company, they don't report things in the same way.
Right.
It's hard to compare the success of something like Windows 10, even with, say, Windows 7, because it's even in this case where we do have numbers that are kind of like hard numbers, they're not the same numbers, you know.
They're not.
In the past, you know, Microsoft would report 20 million licenses sold per month for Windows 7. There's something very real about that, because that when they sell a license, they get paid, and that's revenues and it's profits, and it's, you know, it's a thing. It's very easy to measure. Mm-hmm. It doesn't equate to users. A lot of those licenses were not used right away, were never used in some cases, were used to install previous versions of Windows. it's so in that sense, it's a little squishy. And then if you look at what we have today where they actually report active devices, that's a very real number too. It's a good number. In fact, it's a very good number. But it's not directly comparable to what they, to how they used to report things. But that active devices number for Windows 10 is probably the most accurate and the most transparent number that Microsoft provides for anything today. Because if you look at everything else they do, Xbox One, you know, whatever phone, they don't report those kind of numbers. They talk about engagement and, you know, hours spent playing games. And, you know, they've moved to these kind of, I call them squishy metrics. Like, they're kind of hard to quantify or qualify.
Right. Yep. I think it's just going to get harder and harder as we move forward to even get numbers about Windows at all, because I'm sure as Microsoft changes the metrics that they give out on their earnings, and by the way, next week is earnings, it's going to be more and more obscured about how Windows is doing. They're really all about talking about the cloud, right? Like when you hear the earnings report, you hear them on the earnings call, all they want to talk about is, you know, how are we doing with the cloud? Move to the cloud. That's the only question analysts ask them is, how are you doing with the move to the cloud? Nobody anymore says, how's Windows going, right?
Because it's a health thing. In other words, I think we can all sort of generally say Windows is legacy, cloud is the future. We want to see that Microsoft is making progress toward this future. Can this really old company now generate new money doing new things? And that's a big news story. But I don't know. You know, it's going to be – we're going to see numbers like – X percent of the Fortune 500 has adopted Microsoft's Azure in some way. X percent of the, you know, or, you know, the top or 493 of the Fortune 500 have done something very vague and random with Azure. You know, it's like, it's hard to know what that was. So what does that mean? You know? So
this is, it's interesting to hear, you know, I have this conversation over there on the other show, Mac Break Weekly, all the time. Because Apple's going through a similar angsty kind of situation.
Yeah, and for the same reason.
For the same reason. PC sales, computer sales, we should say, are down. The primary computing platform for most people is their smartphone.
Well, so, I mean, Apple has one dominant product, right? The iPhone is roughly 65% of their revenues.
Yeah, they have a very different issue than Microsoft, but they're coming to the same kind of conclusion. Yeah, Microsoft's going to the cloud.
It's a maturity
Apple's
thing.
Going to more mobile. Apple can't do the cloud because they suck at it. I mean, they've
You know what's good about Apple? There are some areas where they don't provide the kind of numbers I'd like to see. For example, you'll never see how many Macs they sold in the United States. They talk about the Americas for some reason. That's the entire two continents.
That's because it's such a small number. You have to beef it up a little bit.
It's why, I'd love to see
the same reason Microsoft's talking about Windows phone sales and what do they call it? You know, they blobbed it as much as they could because it's so small.
But Apple, as a company that sells primarily to consumers into the retail space, has what I think of as hard numbers. You will see we sold this many iPhones, this many iPads.
It's a physical item.
I like that. They hide some numbers. They don't talk about Apple Watch. They don't talk about Apple TV. But maybe I'm just old school. I really prefer that approach, you know.
But when you're selling software, though, it's a little different, isn't it? I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah. And when you're selling cloud services, I mean,
it's really different.
The information you provide is as nebulous as the service you're providing. I mean, it's.
Although, it's interesting, because Apple's newest profit center is services.
Right. And, which encompasses a bunch of stuff.
Well, it's Apple Music and iCloud. But it's interesting. And that has become a $2 billion, I think, business. It's $6 billion. It's growing quite a bit. So it's a big part now all of a sudden. And sales of – but what's – the problem is you and me, Paul, and I think Mary Jo too, and certainly almost all of our viewers and listeners are computer people.
Yeah.
That's how we got into it, right?
And by the way, I think that's why this message about does Microsoft need Windows anymore – triggers such a knee-jerk reaction from people.
It's scary.
Mary Jo and I exist in a world where people refuse to believe that Windows Phone is over, right? They refuse to believe it. They're looking for the miracle weapon that's going to turn everything around. That's ludicrous, but it's more understandable perhaps because there are over a billion Windows PC users out in the world, absolutely. Windows PCs are used every day to get real work done. It's a real and ongoing concern. There's no doubt about it. So when you say something like, do they even need this product anymore? Of course, that's provocative.
Right.
But right. Like I said, I think there's a conversation to be had around this, because if we're being realistic about this, you know, this thing is, it's changing. You know, there's no doubt about it. And the change is not a positive change. If you love Windows, it's, this market declines. It's just the way it is. It doesn't mean that it goes away completely. And it doesn't mean that that happens in 60 days or 2 years or whatever. But
then, you know, for people like us, we've hit it. Then our question is, but who's going to make our PCs?
What's that?
We could, then who's our question is, who's going to make our PCs? We need computers.
Well, okay. So
what does it look like? This is my interest here. Fast forward 10 years. What does it look like?
You know what? It's not that terrible. So Sony, for example, is a humongous company. Most of their profits and revenues right now, I think it's over 50%, come from this PlayStation business, right? It's really interesting. They've only sold 40 million of those things. I mean, that's twice as many as Xbox One. And so in their market, they're doing well. But 40 million? Apple sells almost double that number in a quarter sometimes, of iPhones. And those devices cost a lot more than a PlayStation 4. So, put it in perspective, these things are still reasonable businesses. The nuanced part about the PC industry is that there's going to be consolidation. There'll be little things, Fujitsu's business gets sold to Lenovo's, whatever. There'll be big ones, too, that we can't really anticipate. But these companies are trying to make money by, finding the parts of the business that can make money. And there are parts of the business that can. Gaming PCs, premium computers. You know, there's a reason Microsoft doesn't sell $200 plastic pieces of junk. They sell premium PCs because that's the part of the PC market that actually does well. It's a lower volume, higher margin, kind of higher quality part of the market. So, Microsoft and Windows may cede ground on the low end to Chromebook. But what they're trying to do is make up the difference on the high end against, the Mac.
By the way, Chromebook outsold Macintosh last quarter.
Yeah, but that makes sense.
It does make sense.
Chromebooks are inexpensive.
I'm pushing Chromebooks. Right. And for most people, it's a simpler, safer, easier solution unless you're a gamer or,
For PC makers, Chromebooks are also a low-margin business.
Oh, yeah, right? They don't want to be in that business, but...
I think what we call a PC is going to change too, right? Like we've talked about Surface Phone, and if that thing ever comes to market, what will that be? Like, will it be a mobile device that isn't really first and foremost a phone? Right. If you have a phone in a lap dock like that new HP Elite X3, is that a PC? Is that a phone? So I think the categories are going to blur too, but that may help Windows stick around longer if they do some kind of a device like that. So and if they continue to make a business out of providing Windows Mobile to OEMs.
That's an interesting, maybe that's what it is in 10 years. You carry around this little nugget.
Yeah. Sure.
And that's a supercomputer. Mm-hmm. And this
actually, Leo, let's take it a step further. You don't carry anything.
Right.
Because the computing is going to be everywhere. That you're going to authenticate against some cloud service, and whatever surface will be a screen that you can access your information on.
Everything is your computer.
It'll just be everywhere.
It's everywhere. The voice interface will be a huge part of this too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's where people want to go anyway.
The computers we carry today, the phones that Mary Jo is describing and the little nubbin thing that you pulled out of your desk are all steps, toward...
I think you're right.
Point where ubiquitous it's like Star computer. Trek. We don't have to worry about it anymore.
There isn't such a thing as a computer.
Yeah. Right. I don't think computers are going to go away anytime soon at all because of the way people do work. We're not the only ones who use PCs. Like, if you go into any kind of a business, it's all PCs. That's like banks, insurance,
our front every office. Industry. You it's go down PCs. The hall from here. And the world changes from Macs and Linux machines down there. It's all Windows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
As it should be.
Right.
Things don't usually happen very quickly, but then I guess you could talk to Nokia or BlackBerry and ask them how quickly they just got upended. Things can happen quickly. Oh, so I don't know. I don't personally think they go away like you guys, but I also think we need to just kind of be mentally prepared for the fact that
that's the fundamental. That's the fundamental change.
It's happening.
Now, so we've now answered that question. So now on top of that layer, who is going to be the driving force in those services and
right
and how what is their business going to look like, and in particular what is Microsoft's. And I, yeah. that, now you understand why Satya Nadella is saying cloud is so important.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you need to respect the base, right? In Microsoft's case, Windows.
You can't throw out the baby with the bathwater. But
right. No. You need to respect the transition that's occurring. I think that's where mobile first, cloud first comes into play, because it's not just Microsoft platforms on mobile. It's, you know, the stuff that's actually popular. And you need to respect the future. And I think Microsoft has a great chance to be super successful in this future. And it's not going to be like it was in the 90s, guys. I mean, like, it's not going to be Microsoft on top of the world, but it's also a bigger world. And yeah. I think it's a world that there's only three companies, four, that could possibly be major players in this. And Microsoft is always in that discussion. You know, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, maybe Apple.
Not Apple. I don't think Apple. No, Apple's not in there. Yeah,
I qualified it. By the way, here's one for you. What, you know, if you accept the fact that Apple is an incredible kind of client side devices type company, they're lacking severely on the back end machine learning AI, I think, because they want to do everything on the device.
Yeah, this privacy thing is killing them. Yeah.
Well, they're not going to. Those guys will never partner with Google. They could partner with Microsoft.
You They've know? Done some partnerships with them around Bing, you know, yeah. and Bing and Siri.
Right. That could be a very lucrative arrangement for both those companies. Because people still make fun of Microsoft sometimes in his jokes about this stuff. But seriously, when it comes to trust in the cloud, I don't understand how Microsoft isn't at the beginning of that conversation.
It's gonna be very interesting for us to watch over the next 5 years, because this is everybody jockeying for what role do we want to play in what everybody, I think, agrees is a post-PC future. And they're all trying to carve out their niche. What I thought was interesting in Google's announcement last week was a shift, I think, for Google. In the past, Google has been kind of content to be the open kind of background provider. Yep. Mm-hmm. And by making now hardware to compete with the iPhone, to compete with the Amazon Echo, to compete with the Eero router, to compete with the Gear VR, they're actually saying, no, we want to have an ecosystem play much like Apple does. And now who's the open provider? Microsoft.
You know, no company has ever successfully
emulated
the Apple.
I agree.
Model.
I agree.
Yep.
And I don't think Google's going to either. As good as that stuff is, I think that those phones
everybody
are
makes a run at this. It's like almost de rigueur. Oh, let's make a run at the Apple model,
Leo. They're going to get zoomed. That's all I'm saying.
Or they're going to do what Microsoft does with Surface and just say, we're only making the premium device and you guys have the rest of the market.
Yeah.
But, you know, and Surface Surface has its fans. There's no doubt about it. I love the Surface Book despite the problems I have with it. We're really not talking about a major business here, not compared to Microsoft's other businesses. If you were to look at the revenues even in their best possible quarter and compare it to the rest of that company, this is a tiny, tiny sliver.
Yeah.
And you need to ignore the several years and several billions of dollars in research and development. The almost $1 billion in write-down they had on the first one. Yeah. All that stuff. You have to just sort of pretend that didn't happen. And then you've got this thing that's like barely anything.
Mm. So let's think about what does this future look like? I'm really.
This is where the screen should fade, and we go to somewhere, and then we have antennas sticking out.
I wish we had the resources to
do
the
Family Guy
to do the video.
Remember the time when?
Yeah. But Microsoft, I think, is of all the companies best positioned for that future.
I think so.
And they have the least risk. See, part of the problem is the innovator's dilemma. You don't want to cannibalize. Apple can't cannibalize the iPhone. And it's too risky. It's too much a part of their business. Microsoft has already kind of written down the stuff that you know, they were going to lose on. And they're in a good position, I think. Google could be in a good position, but they seem like they're throwing a lot of stuff against the wall at this point.
If you're a fan of Microsoft, you should look at this past week Google event with a sense of joy.
Yeah.
Because this is them getting sidetracked by the same thing that sidetracked Microsoft.
Yeah.
It's called Apple Envy.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's no, you know, you can buy books about being like Steve Jobs. It doesn't work that way. And it doesn't mean that this stuff isn't good.
You can wear a black turtleneck, but you might end up in jail, like Theranos. Yeah. So,
right. You know, the mid-1990s, everyone was wearing glasses and they were rocking back and forth and they were talking like Bill Gates all the time. It didn't make you Bill Gates.
No.
You know, sorry, guys.
By the way, I have to apologize to our audience, but this is the thing we tech journalists live for, is this kind of what's going on and trying to understand it. And it's so much more fun than saying, and Chromebooks outsold Macintoshes by 4% last quarter.
Yep. That was another flat quarter in the PC industry.
That's not fun. Yeah. But it is it's the raw material that kind of starts to stimulate your thinking.
Sure.
And I think that's why, I won't speak for you guys. That's why I got into this, is I'm very interested in where we're headed, where we're going, and what it's going to look like.
The one thing that really gives me great hope for everything is that when I did get started in this industry, I had a tremendous sense of dread that I had missed it, because I would go back and I would read about the early days of the PC industry, the Mac, and the beginning of the IBM PC. And I thought, man, this was... that all happened and it was awesome and I missed it.
It's because you're younger than me.
I always felt terrible about that.
I always felt bad about missing the 60s.
We all miss this, you know. But in our industry, our industry is neat because things actually happen pretty quickly, right? So since that time, we've had the internet tidal wave, as Bill Gates or somebody at Microsoft referred to it. We've had the rise of mobile. And now we've got this thing where we're talking about VR and AR and mixed reality and machine learning in the cloud and personal digital assistants and bots. And it's a freaking mess and it's awesome.
Kevin Kelly.
It's all happening again.
Kevin Kelly, who did not miss the 60s and has been around from the Whole Earth Catalog on, and really is a brilliant guy, and has written a new book that was fascinating. We just interviewed him a couple of months ago on Triangulation. Said that in 2050, people are going to be saying, oh, man, you were around in 2016? You were there for the beginning of the AI revolution? Oh, man, that must have been so exciting. All the opportunities. We got nothing now.
Sure. Leo, you played an audiobook clip where they were talking about the beginning of the company Nintendo, and it was 1895 or something.
Yeah.
I can assure you, to my children, when I talk about the 1980s and the Amiga and the early Macs and the PC industry, that's what that sounds like to them.
Yep.
I am describing ancient
1890s,
history.
Yep. But I do think that we're going to be – that's – you know, if you look ahead for us, for and particularly for Twit –
well, 2050 is not in my future.
No, we're not going to be around. But the next for the next 5 or 10 years, Twit is going to be all about what artificial intelligence does to change technology. And part of that is I think you well aptly put, Paul, the idea of computing. We've already seen it, computing everywhere. That's what the Internet of Things is about. But the disappearance of computing into the fabric of our lives.
Well, although it's Star Trek, goofily, they had no money, but they carried around phasers and medical devices.
It's funny you're saying this about AI, Leo, because when I started covering the industry, I wrote a lot about AI 20 plus years ago. And I feel like our use of the word AI now is kind of meaningless. And what we really mean is like statistics built into
big data
technology.
And machine learning is a term.
Yeah.
But you went through, and I remember this too. In fact, for a while we laughed at the concept of AI because it was like Marvin Minsky and company just proved it.
Well, it's like playing a chess game with a computer.
It was impossible. Yeah. But what happened, I think at the time we didn't have memory enough and computing power enough. Mm. And so it was a dream, but a dream that couldn't be manifested with existing computer technology. And there were some dead ends. I mean, the idea that, if you just feed enough information into a computer, it will get smart.
Yeah. Right.
And yet, Mary Jo, really, that's kind of happening now. And a lot of the things we talked about 20 and 30 and 40 years ago.
Yeah. I think the word AI right now is my pet peeve.
It's still tarnished for you. It's still tarnished for you.
It means it's meaningless right now.
Cloud computing is almost the same thing. It's like Larry Ellison is kind of a buffoon, but in the early days of cloud computing, he had some quote like, what are you talking about? We've had this forever. It's called client-server computing. There's no difference. You've just moved the server from this room to this room over here. I mean, I think sometimes it helps to have a simple term that can, you know, communicate what we're doing to normal people. But I agree, AI has been around for a long time.
Intelligence is a bad word because it is. A machine intelligence is not what we think of as intelligence.
Right.
However, sure. They ask us,
it is. And then one day they're going to look at us and say, by the way, we figured out what the weak link in this plan is, and it's you.
It's you, meatbags.
Yeah.
I have to point to last Sunday's Westworld, in which they said, well, if you can't tell the difference, what does it matter? And that's by the way, that's what Ray Kurzweil would always say to me when I said, well, it's not going to be a thinking brain because there's something ineffable in the human intelligence that no machine could duplicate. And his response, his stock response has always been, and if you can't tell a difference, so what?
Yep.
And I do think we're at the very early days, but I don't see Mary Jo, you were burned, as was I, by the snake oil that was sold to us as AI.
Yeah. Hey, I think you know, it's we're applying that term to too many disparate things. Like if we were only talking about machine learning, I think I would be okay with it. But when people say like, you know, bots are AI and this
Siri
is AI,
is AI,
AI.
And it's like,
right. I don't know.
Siri is a giant switch statement. It's like an Infocom game. It can respond correctly if you use certain words. And if you don't, it has no idea what you're
Siri,
talking about.
Let's face it, is artificial stupidity.
It is
what's wrong with AI.
Well, it's exactly what's wrong with Apple's approach, right? In other words, by over-respecting your privacy in some ways and keeping everything on the device, you know, they can't benefit from machine learning that occurs in the cloud.
Yeah. Right. So your cautions are well taken, Mary Jo. I agree. Yeah. And yet I'm still bullish on whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The big data revolution, the machine. I like the word machine learning. Google's kind of preferred that to AI.
Yeah. Yeah.
Learning. What does that mean, learning? Well, it's just machines that are able to evolve without our explicit help. So neural networks.
Or that are being fed more and more and more data, which they can index and then use via algorithms, right?
You see this. I mean, there is some, like you see this in Google Photos when you type in a search term, and it's been chewing on all your photo data all this time.
Sure.
And now it can find pictures of my son in the snow. That's machine learning, isn't it?
But machine learning can also get cancer, right? Like I had, one of my Lumias had incorrect location data. So Google Photos thinks I've spent a lot of time in China, and I haven't. So it's kind of interesting. If I can search for China, for example, and I'll see pictures of my kids playing in the yard. Here's a trip we did, went to Vermont, you know.
I'm not saying it's yet to the state of a five-year-old.
Sure.
But it's farther along than maybe we thought, and certainly farther along than the failures of the 70s and 80s. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. You're right, Mary Jo, to be skeptical.
I think it's cool what's happening, and I think it's amazing that there are more things like cognitive services and, you know, facial recognition and computer vision, all these great things that are starting to actually show up in various places. But I worry that people think this is going along much quicker than it really is. I'm a skeptic, as usual.
I don't know. You can't. I mean, I tend to be skeptical.
Something Dvorak taught me early on: you can't go wrong by saying it's all crap.
Exactly. He's a master.
Some of us have built careers off that.
You'll miss a few. You know, there'll be the case where you say nobody wants a mouse, but 99% of the time you'll be right because it is. All right, you got to help me with this Windows update thing in a second because it's driving me nuts. I have a brand new Surface Book in effect. It's hardly used. I've only installed, you know, very base software, the kind of the stuff you would install like Office and Minecraft, but I can't install the latest update. What's going on? You'll help, I'm sure, but first. You better. I'm using Windows because of you. You know. You sold me on this thing, this Windows thing. No, I've been using it all my life, but this is, I don't know. It feels to me like I'm having more troubles, more blue screens, more problems than Windows than I ever, even 3.11. Well, your response in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. See, this is a good example of putting technology to work at a very simple problem and solving that problem using databases, using the internet, using connectivity. ZipRecruiter, if you are one of the people in your business who has to do the hiring, you have an awesome responsibility because companies, and by the way, I think Steve Jobs said it, the company is the one of the seminal inventions, the great inventions of the 19th century. The fact that people could all get together, align around a purpose, and create something that no individual could do by themselves, it's amazing. We look at what companies have done. It's amazing. But the key to this is it's made of people. It's like Soylent Green. It's made of people. And hiring the right person is so important. Hiring the wrong person could topple the house of cards. You know it. You've had bad employees. A bad employee does a lot of damage. The right employee can transform your company. And that's why ZipRecruiter is such a great tool. It helps you find the right person. They're out there somewhere. The problem is where? You post to one or two job boards, there's no guarantee you're going to hit that person. But you post to 100-plus job boards, you have a much better chance. Now, you say, well, how am I going to find that needle in the haystack? I've suddenly created a giant pile of applicants. That's good. That's good. You want a lot of applicants as long as you have a good, quick, and easy way to screen them, and that's what ZipRecruiter gives you. So you post on ZipRecruiter. They post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere. The candidates come rolling in. You'll immediately get applicants in the first 24 hours, and then they start rolling in. But they don't call your phone. They don't email your inbox. They go into the ZipRecruiter interface, and this thing is superb. You get all the candidates in there. You can create screening questionnaires for the candidates. This is really sweet. And they're very flexible. You can do free form, multiple choice, yes, no, whatever. But so it'll give them the screening quiz that you prepare, give you their resume beautifully formatted. So there's a commonality, makes it easy to skim through them. The answers to the questions, it'll automatically screen out people that don't meet your criteria. You can screen the rest very quickly, rank them, and find the right person fast. It's an amazing tool. Over a million businesses have used ZipRecruiter. 277 candidate applicants have been delivered. You're going to hire the right person fast. It's amazing. You know, when we started doing these ads, it was, I think, was it 400,000 businesses have used ZipRecruiter? It's now over a million. And by the way, Twitch should be on this list somewhere because we've been using it too, and it's awesome. You can try it free right now. All you have to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Please use that URL so that you not only get the free trial, but that they know that you heard about it here on Windows Weekly. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Hire the right person fast. And it's free right now when you go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. The best way. Hire that right person so you don't have to fire that wrong person. And that's the worst part of being in business. It's getting the wrong person and having to fire them. It's terrible. All right. Two people here who have their jobs for life. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley.
We are Let's lifers.
Hope. No.
Let's hope.
No, I promise. Well, you always have a job with us because, man, I mean, there are no better people to cover the Microsoft world than Paul and Mary Jo. And Mary Jo Foley, you'll find it all about Microsoft.com. That's the address for the special address for her ZDNet blog. And Paul Thurrott, of course, as I mentioned, Thurrott.com. So yesterday, Tuesday, was the first Patch Tuesday with this new monolithic update. How's it going?
I am surprised. I have not heard people yelling so far.
Good.
Like,
just me, huh?
The only complaints I was getting yesterday were people who couldn't get the cumulative update for anniversary update to work.
Maybe that's what's going on. I think that is what's going on for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not exactly a loop. It just downloads it, installs it, and then at some point in the install, it says, I'm sorry, I can't do this.
Yep.
And reboots. I mean, at least I still have a working Windows, but I'm scared because
I did install it last night on a Surface Book.
Okay.
I was just going to go look at it, but actually it did install because it does two reboots during the install. It reboots to install it, then it reboots again in the middle of the install.
But you're on the fast ring or no anymore?
No, that one is just on the production.
Okay, version. So this is production. It says cumulative update for Windows 10 version 1607. It's KB3194798. I don't know which one that is.
I do, Leo. I can tell you exactly what's in that update.
Is that the Patch Tuesday, or is that a update I have to do before Patch Tuesday?
I think that's the one that just came out.
Okay.
It is.
Restart now. So it's apparently downloaded it one more time.
So you're saying that you get to that whatever color screen where it's installing updates 30%.
Yep. And then at halfway through, it says, without any information, useful information, I'm sorry.
So I'll tell you, you are not alone. This I heard from at least five people yesterday on Twitter that this happened to also. And it turns out that some of the people who this was happening to are people who also had problems with the most recent cumulative update before this, which was like a week or two ago.
See, that's the thing is I wasn't here a week or two ago. So it may be that previous one. I don't know.
So if it is, there's a scripting fix that Microsoft put out to stop this from happening.
Okay.
Right, and we don't have that in the notes for some reason. Did we talk about this before?
No, I think we talked about it last week when the scripting fix came out, and maybe that's why it's not in the notes today.
Oh, you know what? So last week we talked about it coming, and then this week we don't have.
I see your article it's in the here. Notes. Yeah, Microsoft fixed
there it is. It. Yeah.
Windows 10 update. All right.
See, look and at her. Look how happy she is.
She looks really happy.
I've been borked. is that stock footage? Where did you get this? This is marvelous.
It's from a Microsoft video.
That's hysterical. She's got a Surface Pro 4. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing, and I would understand this maybe if I weren't, if I were on some third-party platform. This is Microsoft's own Surface Book, unmodified with their drivers and everything. I mean, this is as vanilla.
Well, you're bringing common sense to a discussion about magic.
I mean, this is the first hardware they tested.
I know.
Yeah. Everything you're saying makes sense.
It does. And it's very frustrating to people who have Surface Pros and Surface Books that they're like, well, how can it not work on this of all things, right?
Yeah.
What Microsoft said when they put out the scripting fix was, we think this is affecting people who at one point were running an insider build on their system and then switched to RTM.
That's me. Okay.
So you're in the group of people who are the prime ones who
we call it the
supposedly
magic
were affected.
I'm in the magic quadrant.
You are. Yep.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so that is the one thing I did that is kind of not typical.
Yep.
All right. So
I would say apply the scripting fix, then try to get those cumulative updates.
So you want to get KB3197794. That you won't get automatically, right? You have to go to the Microsoft site to get that. Apply that one.
That's right.
You'll get the cumulative updates if you want to wait for them.
He means the script.
The fix is a KB, a knowledge base, and it's the one ending in 794. That you download by hand, run it, and then you can get the rest of it. Okay. And this is they told ZDNet, but they didn't tell you.
Yeah, I thought that was so weird. It was Ed. You know, it has nothing to do with Ed or ZDNet. It's like, guys, you just fixed a problem that all these people have. How about telling us about it?
Right.
No.
Why would I have to read about this on another blog? You should have informed everyone about this.
Well, and yesterday I went through this process like five times thinking, it'll fix itself.
Well, and for some people, that did the trick too. Like I talked to one guy, he said, okay, it's tried three times now. And then he said, okay, the fourth time it worked. Yep.
That's weird, isn't it? That's weird.
Yeah, I know.
Were you facing the sun when you installed it? Right.
Well, now it says that was the first reboot, and now we're up to 58%. I think
this part goes pretty quick. It's funny. So you actually got a reboot. This is probably going to work. Well, I mean, sorry. Did you get to this screen, and then at one point it rebooted and came back to this screen?
Yep.
Yeah, then it's probably going to work.
Yeah, this is second stage cancer. known as Windows Update. So, but if it doesn't work, I'll download that particular individual update. And you can get this at Paul's site.
You can get it.
Search for Borked, And I'm sure that's the only good time Paul's ever used the word borked.
I like to use the correct scientific terms.
Nice job.
Hey, question. Does that come from the failed nomination of Justice Bork for Robert Bork to the Supreme Court?
You've been borked?
You've been borked? Do you think that's where it comes from?
I don't know. I hope it does. Wouldn't that be funny? If it does, that's a fairly recent thing to have
brand
a
new word.
It's like you've been Munsoned.
You've been Munsoned. well, yeah, I'm up to 83%, 84%. Maybe it did. Maybe it did. But otherwise, I know what the fix is.
Cross your fingers.
Did you spin in your chair three times and do a little jig?
I have a dead cat. Should I swing that around my head?
Yep.
No, I don't. Yeah. That's mean. I don't.
That's mean.
All of our cats are alive and well. Sometimes I wish they weren't, but they're all alive. I have three cats now.
Three?
Lisa,
you're almost to cat lady status.
Lisa keeps adding to our collection. And
you
by the way,
collect them all.
I think we're on the way. Okay. Yeah, there it is. We couldn't complete the updates.
Oh, it happened again.
Yeah.
Really?
Undoing changes. Don't turn off your computer.
So that was around 90 something.
Yeah, it was almost 90% when that happened.
Okay. So you have not tried the script.
No, no. I will now. And probably before the show is over, I'll have a result.
That's
and I'm sorry. I apologize for saying anything about kitties.
I should look at. I'm going to look at mine. I wonder. You know, I'm so proud of the fact that I got this installed, but maybe I didn't.
It got up to 90, and you're like, "Oh, good, got it."
Well, the in the long run, if this does keep happening, I'm just going to reinstall Windows 10 clean.
Yeah.
And then I won't have
that's not going to help, Leo, because oh, I see what you're saying.
No, because that won't have been an insider ever. Or does it know?
Yeah, it does know. That's the issue. I know. It's crazy.
So even a clean install would not fix this.
That's what this is. I did a clean install.
Oh my God.
It's had Insider on it before. No, I guess I got it.
If you've ever been an Insider.
You're tainted for life. That's how the Insider program works.
Well, I've learned my lesson. No more Insidering.
Yeah. And you know, that scripting fix, I heard from people who said, oh, yeah, that worked. And then I heard from other people who said, well, that didn't work. So
interesting.
Another one like, yeah, okay.
Do we know what the script does? It tells Microsoft, this person has never been an Insider. These are not the Insiders you want. Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's unreal.
So that's the cumulative. No, it's a knowledge base update 319-7794. That's the one you want. That's the script fix. And then you can go back and do Windows update and it should all work.
Try it again. Right.
Okay.
And if it fails, keep trying because I'm not kidding you. I had several people on Twitter yesterday saying, oh, it didn't work. Oh, I tried it again. Nope.
Well, then it third like time. Leo's done this at least three times.
Oh, this is my sixth time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I think after six, you can fairly give up, right?
Yeah. It's the definition of insanity by that point.
I did it all through Security Now. And people were watching Security Now and they kept saying, what's going on with that laptop over there? Right. Leo seems to be.
Does it always take this long?
Yeah. Leo seems to be updating a lot. yeah. All right. All supported Windows 10 versions are getting their own individual cumulative updates.
Yeah. That was yesterday.
No new features, obviously. Bug fixes.
Well, there's three, if you count them, 3 0 days that are in the wild.
It's not important,
no, it's really important. They're already in the wild. Yeah. Now, for those of you who are the brave, hardy souls who are on the Insider, mm-hmm. You're going to get a new build too, right? Soon. Redstone 2 build 14942.
That came Friday?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In 1400-942, Columbus sailed the ocean blue to bring Redstone 2.
Where we are in life. None of us can think past the weekend.
Yeah. Friday. Well, that's not for this show.
Like, what day is today again?
Yeah, right. That was the Friday build, that new Redstone 2 build for PCs. And There were a bunch of like kind of semi-minor feature updates, although I know there were a couple things people were excited about. I think there was something having to do with
they never talked about.
Right. Service hosts being split into separate processes. I know a lot of people were really excited about that.
I mean, excited is a strong word, but I...
It is. It is.
I see that as a positive development.
Yeah.
And I was, what else? I was talking earlier about paint, but in fact, was there a leaked paint?
Yeah, it was a leaked version, yeah.
Yeah.
What's the story
it's
there?
It's such a piece of garbage, Leo.
Is it?
Is it? Did you try it?
Yeah, it's like a giant Fisher-Price terribleness. I saw the pictures of it and I thought, you know, maybe they're going to UWP everything in Windows and this will be really great. And I actually use paint literally every single day. I use it every day. Yeah. And I turned this thing on and it was like, it's like, you remember when Windows 8 first came out and all the apps had these gigantic round buttons and they were like, you could only fit like 8 of them across the, you know, it's that kind of thing. It's like, just, it's terrible.
Man, you use paint for those things that you do on your blog?
Yeah, I use a mixture of paint and Photoshop.
Why would you use paint at all?
Paint is really good at certain things.
Oh.
Yeah.
I just always thought of paint as like the freebie kitty version.
No, there's no picture on my site that doesn't pass through paint at least once.
Really? What does it do well?
Cropping, really good.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, all right.
You know, I'll take a screenshot, I'll throw it in paint, I'll crop it there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because it's there, it's fast, it's easy.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll add shapes to pictures, like if I want to draw an arrow pointing at something.
So it's like awesome. The Irfan view for the 21st century.
That word doesn't mean anything to me, Leo.
you know Irfan view. You no, do. Don't give me that.
No, it's I guess so. I like the way it works.
All right, I am back to making sure.
We had a discussion earlier about PCs. Remember?
Oh, PCs, those guys.
This is where I'm at.
Wasn't there, and there still is, a wonderful painting program called Paint.
Paint.net. Yeah. So I can't use Paint.net. I looked to see. I use the Elements version of Photoshop. That's the $100 version.
Yeah.
Not the $8,000.
Yeah, but it's got all the tools you need. Yeah.
Yeah, and it has major advantages over regular Photoshop. The keyboard shortcuts are much simpler. I only need it for a couple of things, so it's perfect what I need. But you know, Adobe has licensing issues. I use lots of different computers. Like moving Photoshop from PC to PC is actually kind of an arduous task. And if you forget to unregister it or whatever, you end up on the phone with Adobe. It's kind of a mess. So. I looked at replacing it with many things, and one of them was Paint.net. But it's just a workflow thing. I have to crop graphics 16:9. Paint.net will do that, but the Paint.net tool that does cropping will not save 16:9 as the ratio. So every time I go back to the tool, it's reset to 1:1, and I use it. Too much to do that again every single time I have to use it.
So I just searched for Therat.com and Borked. You've used that word quite a few times.
Have I really? That's
funny. So the better search is Microsoft fixes Borked update and that brought me.
How else have I used it? That's funny.
Oh, webcam, Borked. There's been a few places where Microsoft has Borked.
As it turns out, I'm not very inventive.
No, Borked is the best word ever.
Cortana's Borked
is Borked.
Xbox app is Borked.
Yeah, it turns out. So now I'm going to get the update. I'm going to download it from Microsoft.
Battery fix is Borked.
Windows 10 1607 script fix to unblock Windows update for Windows insiders, which I'm not. Right. They should say, or former
insiders.
Insiders.
Right.
Yeah, they should say that.
Okay.
So yeah, right. Actually, right. Article
it's a registry. It's a registry.
It looks
update.
Like that's not something for normal people.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to allow this app to make changes to your device update? It's named Update Registry.
Of course you do.
Yeah, of course I do.
What could go wrong?
And it's going to update the Windows registry. And there it is. And it's just
when
one of those.
When is a Microsoft update ever not done exactly what they said it was going to do, Leo? That's why we're here.
It's just one of those typical, it's basically a shell script that. You know, a batch file that does the Windows update. All right, so now let me run update again, and I can give you feedback as to check for updates. Your device is up to date. Oh, no, it's not. Oh, no. And then I love it. They give you a little pop-up. Well, last update couldn't complete. Click here for more information. Nothing.
Oh, yeah, and you click there, and you get no information.
No information. Because we don't know what happened.
Yeah.
What would be nice if they said, oh, ooh, ooh. Click this link, download this fix, and then it'll work. But no.
Nothing like
that. It would be nice.
Yeah, it would be nice.
Instead, you got...
While you guys are doing this, there's people on Twitter who are having the exact same problem, Leo, and one Surface Pro artist just applied the fix and said, yay, it fixed it.
I'll know soon. I'm running the
I guarantee now. You, though, before the show's over, we're going to hear from someone who did not fix it.
Yeah. Yep, it will be. Yeah.
Okay, it's the good news is I didn't have to re-download the update. It saw it and said, oh, yeah, you got it. I mean, it didn't know it had it, but it didn't download it all again, which is nice.
And right.
Now we'll, so this is 798 cumulative update. I will, before the back of the book, have a update.
You will. You will. Be optimistic about
Sounds
this.
Sounds so confident.
Yeah.
How many times does this thing have to hit you in the face before you figure it out?
I just, the problem is... I have you guys. And anybody who listens to the show has you guys, or Ed Bott, or somebody. But there are hundreds of millions of Windows users who don't know what happened.
I know.
And they're just going to go on saying, well, I guess I can't update. And they will never again update Windows. And that means that those 3 0-day flaws that are out today and everything that comes out after that – they're completely vulnerable to. They're going to get bit, and then they're going to call me on the radio show and say, what happened? And I'm going
to
say,
but one thing
you
to remember,
were borked.
A lot of times, though, if you ever go back and look in your Windows update history, you'll see, like, there were many attempts that if you didn't proactively go get an update, it'll try and try, and it'll fail. And then one day, it'll... actually happen on its own without you trying to proactively go get it. So I guess that's what they're counting on. But yeah, it's not a good look, and it makes people nervous when they see this failing.
And it opens the entire internet to security issues that we all suffer from as a result.
Right.
And that's why I tell people buy a Chromebook.
So let me ask you guys a question. Do we need Windows?
No. So I'm going to, by the way, I did a look up on Borked, and it does appear to be Robert Bork.
Oh, is
That's
it really?
Amazing. Wow.
But what That's I'm going to do is do a Google Trends search and see, when the word Borked became.
I think we've used Borked before Robert Bork, haven't we?
No, I think not.
No?
I think this is brand new. I'm going to do
it's
a
It's one
search.
Of those words I feel like I've always said, but maybe it's just because I've said it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steve Sandoff, borking as a service. I like that.
Thank you, Microsoft. By the way, now it's just sitting here.
Yeah.
Oh, this is really looking worse and worse. So I don't know if this – you tell me what this means when you get this. It says update status. Updates are available. Cumulative update. Mm-hmm. Downloaded 100%.
Oh, no, that's nothing, Leo. That's fine. It's going to happen. I see that a lot.
It's just you wait until the restart button pops up.
You got to remember, most people are never going to go to Windows
Update. We don't look at this. Right.
Click update now or whatever and sit and look at it.
Okay.
It's like toast. It's not going to happen.
Don't watch it.
Don't watch your pot. It'll never boil.
Watch updates don't update.
Okay.
But while you're doing this, can I talk about the Windows 7 and 8 thing?
No, tell us about that.
Yeah, so yesterday, in addition to all these cumulative updates we're talking about right now, it was the first day where Microsoft rolled out these cumulative patches for Windows 7, 8, Server 2008, and 2012. So this is the beginning of Microsoft delivering all the patches as a roll-up. I didn't hear complaints. I was glad. So far, so good, let's say, because people were worried about this. The idea is Microsoft makes it easier on admins by giving them all the patches together. That way, everybody's kind of at a level playing field when you're updating machines and you know where you're at. People were saying, yeah, but if there's a bad patch, you have to take off the whole thing and you can't apply that roll-up. Even if there are really important updates in there, you can't apply it if there's some other crazy little update that's broken. So this is the beginning of that. Microsoft said there's going to be three different new days that you need to know about, at least three different kinds of updates you need to know about. One is security only update. One is a security update that's more also features and fixes. And then there's on the, what day is it? Third Tuesday of the month, there's going to be a preview of the security update, which is now called the preview roll-up. It just makes Patch Tuesday go even longer in a way. Like you're going to have, now we've got the first Tuesday of the month is office updates. The second Tuesday of the month are the security updates and quality updates. And then the third Tuesday of the month for people who want to do this is the preview of the security update for the next month. So there's even more fun on Tuesdays.
I just heard word salad. I don't know what I'm.
we're quickly approaching the point where every day of the month we'll have some kind of an update associated.
Yeah,
it's Patch Thursday.
Yeah.
It's again. Third Friday update.
It's second Patch Thursday.
Okay, now, okay, this looks like it's downloading another thing or something. Ooh. I don't know what it's doing. It started over. It didn't reboot, but it just, the bar went from 100% to 5%. Yeah. Maybe it was, oh, that's probably what that pause is. It's scanning through it.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Never second guess this stuff.
No.
HoloLens is available in more countries. Thank you very much. That's all to say about that. Nothing more to say.
Well, if you're in Europe, you're probably excited, right?
I guess. It's $1,600 still, though, right?
It's
$3,000.
Unless you get the business version, which is $5,000.
It's like
And with the currency difference, it's even more over there.
Yeah, they do that, don't they? It's not a strict conversion to euros.
No.
I think
we should say what countries. France, Germany, the UK, also Australia and New Zealand and Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
That sucks.
Yeah. The entire Commonwealth except for Canada.
And Canada already has it.
Oh, and Zimbabwe.
Yep. So I think the one thing people need to remember about the HoloLens is this thing has been on this kind of slow boil of release, right? But the thing you're getting is still the developer edition. It's not like there's some consumer product out there. It's a $3,000 developer edition. The version you get if you're a commercial customer is the developer edition. It's still, you know, it's you know, there are 80 apps in the store.
Yeah.
Most of them are something along the lines of there's lava on the floor and you have to hop around and not step on it kind of level of, you know, sophistication. So, you know, it's still very much an early time for this thing. It's a, we would still kind of call this, I mean, they're selling it, right? But it's like a pre-release kind of developer-oriented thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. I want one, but I don't want to spend that much money.
So, and we should bring this up because when we first saw HoloLens and talked about HoloLens, we thought that the idea was there'd be a business version of HoloLens from Microsoft and a consumer. Mm-hmm. From Microsoft. But more and more, what I hear is that's not the case. This HoloLens that's out now, you know, there may be multiple iterations of it as it moves forward, but it's always going to be a business/premium device, just like the Surface line is for Microsoft. And they're going to count on other partners, other PC vendors and device makers to make the consumer version of this, not Microsoft.
I was going to say, maybe even more to the point, the way that this technology will probably reach a broad audience, if it ever does, is through the bundling of the core technology in Windows and then the availability of much cheaper VR/mixed reality headsets from a variety of companies or the addition of those capabilities to existing solutions like Oculus Rift or whatever. So, you know, we'll look back on this first release as being this kind of anachronistic, kind of, you know, quaint thing because whether or not it ever takes off in a meaningful way, it's not going to be in this form, right? It's going to be just as part of Windows. You know, we had tablet PCs in the past. Now, actually, we sort of still have tablet PCs, but you could technically add pen capabilities to basically any computer if you wanted to as a PC maker, I mean.
Yeah, so it's good. It's expanding in market. I like you, Paul. I'm interested what they're going to show us or tell us about HoloLens and the holographic shell when we talk about Redstone 2 in October, because I think that's when we're going to see and hear more about what the big plan is, right?
I described it to Mary Jo earlier today as the Windows Inc. of Redstone 2, which
you did.
She sensed was a little bit of a dig, and I guess I did sort of mean it that way, but in the sense that it will be a marquee feature. I don't it's an exciting thing to talk about. It's kind of a differentiator. I don't think it's going to be a big deal for most people, frankly, especially in the beginning. But, you know, it is something that Windows has, you know, that isn't available elsewhere or will have.
You know what else Windows has?
What?
A restart
updates
button.
Updates that never install.
A restart button. Yay.
Yay.
Let me see what happens now.
Leo, I got a good feeling about this.
I do too.
You know what I just got? I'm so excited. I got my IT Pro TV invitation. These guys really went all out on the invitation. They're doing, they're our sponsor, and I'm going to take a break for a commercial, okay? Back of the book, coming up in just a second. IT Pro TV is a great solution for people who are looking to become IT pros. You know, you want to get the certs that help you get the job, or IT pros who want to keep up on the field. And IT Pro TV was started by two guys who've been IT trainers for years. And they wanted to do something kind of like what we do, which is a live broadcast 24/7 they're live Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, so even more than we are. And then that chat room, and then a library of things. So it's kind of like Twit, but just for IT pros. They've done so well. I'm really a little jealous at this point, emulating us, that IT Pro TV is now building a new studio in Gainesville, Florida. This is the invitation. We're going to go out there at the end of the month to see it, to their grand opening. Their new studio has not one, not two, but five studios. So have you ever had an invitation like this? Look at this. It's like a little TV set in a box. It's so cool. Anyway, they're giving a tour of their IT Pro TV studios. But I want you to check it out because this is great. They've gone from, a small company to a machine. Content is amazing. More than 1,000 hours of content, more added every week, and you can watch it on your Chromecast, your Roku, your Amazon Fire TV, your Apple TV. They have a great Apple TV app, or your PC. You'll learn at your own pace. You can kind of learn by osmosis. I know a lot of IT pros who just keep IT Pro TV running on their Roku in the background. So you're always learning. Topics include, of course, things like MCSA Windows 10, MTA Security Fundamentals, their Certified Ethical Hacker courses. In October, they're doing courses on CCNA Routing and Switching, Installation, Storage, and Compute with Server 2016, Windows Operating Fundamentals. Paul, you'll love this, Red Hat Linux. Networking with Windows Server 2016 and a whole lot more. You get transcripts of everything. As I said, you can download them. If you have the year-long subscription, you can download and watch offline. They have a virtual machine lab. You don't even have to have a Windows machine or even a PC, just a HTML5 browser, and you can set up a Windows server, set up the clients in their virtual machine labs. You could take the test before you take the test with the Transcender practice exams. Normally $109 free with your subscription. You could even, subscriptions are, you know, the best way to do this, but you can even buy individual courses at Amazon Video Direct. I think they're the first to have done this. By the way, if you're currently signed up for an enterprise account with an IT Pro TV competitor and you just got an email saying we're going to raise your rates, IT Pro TV has an offer for you. They're going to match last year, your previous year's pricing on that account, so you and your team can keep learning at an affordable rate. IT Pro TV's clients include the biggest companies in the world. And by the way, Harvard, the entire IT department subscribes, MIT, UCSD, Stanford. It's just amazing. So as you can see here, if you're watching, they have a basic subscription, which lets you watch the live streaming daily via web and Roku. That includes their Microsoft MTA certification course, which is awesome, plus CompTIA's Strata certification course. But most people are going to opt for the subscription, $57 a month, $570 a year. You get 2 months free if you buy a year. I've got a better deal for you. Go to itpro.tv. itpro.tv/ww. itpro.tv/ww. That way they know you saw it on Windows Weekly. We want to make sure Paul and Mary Jo get credit. And then use an offer code WW30. And what do you get? You get 7 days free. So it's a way to try this and get the full membership free for 7 days. See if you like it. And then if you subscribe, 30% off. And not just for the first, there's Don mugging in my studio, not just for the first month, 30% off forever for the life of your account. And as I said, a lot of people take this, they take the test, they get the cert, and then keep it because it keeps them up to date. It's well worth it, let me tell you. And actually, with 30% off, we're talking less than $40 a month. Or buy a year for $400, and you just, it's a lifetime of learning, and it's fun. itpro.tv/ww. And don't forget to use the offer code WW30. And Tim and Don and the gang, I'm going to see you out there October 27th. Have you ever seen an invitation that's a book with a TV in it?
That looks like a...
isn't that wild?
What do you call those things with you draw the lines on the screen?
An Etch-a-Sketch.
Etch-a-Sketch, yeah.
Yeah.
This is how cheap computers and screens have gotten.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's like a card. There's Don. I mean,
I'm going to send Christmas cards this year like that.
I know! He drives me crazy because, frankly, they're doing so much better than we are. and it's kind of because we...
It's really funny.
Yeah, the relationship we've had. I mean, really, it's cool. This studio is amazing, this new studio they're building. anyway, back to the back of
How's
the
your service book doing?
Working on updates. Let me show you. 28%. So this is the first reboot.
Yeah. It hasn't happened quite yet. Somewhere 30%-ish it reboots.
Well, just did. You are. Either you broke my machine.
Yep, either that or it's dead.
or you're a miracle man.
I can't really hear it anymore.
What? So if with any luck, before the show's over, we'll have an update. But before we do that, let's get our Windows Tip of the Week with Mr. PT.
What is my Tip of the Week?
Oh, you don't have to do one if you don't have one.
Oh, no, I have an awesome one.
Oh. You just don't remember.
That's
the duty.
Debatable, but okay.
It must have to do with gaming, right?
Take a while.
Oh, it does.
So, you know, we were having a conversation earlier about AI and the future of pervasive computing and everything. And one of the things I keep going back to, I should write something about this sometime. I think of it as like digital memories. And it gives me, hope is not the right word. It makes me think about like the Matrix and people in those pods and they think they're living real lives. I mean, I've been playing these very realistic first-person shooters for so long and had played them for so long each year that I have these very real memories of the, you know, the places in the games. And
that's kind of creepy.
I know. It's an interesting thing. I can go back. I spent not this last Call of Duty game, but the one before that, Advanced Warfare, I didn't really like it that much. I didn't like the multiplayer. It was very unusual. So I spent much of the subsequent year going back and replaying all the old games online. And you get into these games you haven't played in 6, 7, 10 years, whatever. And you remember the levels, how they're laid out. You remember where people will be sniping you from.
That's so strange. It's like in your body.
They're like places to you. Like
books,
they're real.
Books on tape do that. Audible books do that too. Where you're like, I'll remember, like, oh, I was turning the corner here when I heard this passage. It's so strange.
Yep.
All right, here we go. 80, 90%. This is farther than we've ever gone before. 96%. 98. 100%. It worked.
There you go.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me show my face. It worked.
So, go ahead, Paul. Congratulations.
Thank you. Well,
so there's a new Call of Duty game coming out this year, and it's going to be whatever it is, Infinite Warfare. We'll see. But in some ways, the more exciting part of this is it comes with a remastered version of Modern Warfare, the Call of Duty 4 from 2007.
Oh, wow.
It's all HD graphics, renewed sound. It's all redone. It's nice. Beautiful.
It's fun to play those old games again, isn't it?
Well, this one plays like a new game because it looks new. It's awesome. So if you pre-order it digitally, you'll be able to play the game early And if you got it on PlayStation 4, you can do it right now. I think on Xbox One, it's going to be like the end of October. But regardless, the game is coming out in the beginning of November. So I got it. I downloaded it on Saturday, and I've already finished it. It's awesome. And it is a reminder of how good these games can be. And for all those people out there who don't like Call of Duty, for whatever reason, I would say you got to go back and play this one again, because this game is incredible. It's awesome. And it's worth buying this new game just to get it. It's really, really, really good. I'm going to do it again. When it comes out on the Xbox, I'm going to do it again.
Mary Jo, really you like should it. Do it. Everybody should do it.
Everybody should do it. Everybody.
Yep. Pre-order this game and play it now. God damn it.
It's great.
Well, that was such a great pick, Paul. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
But why not do an app pick? I saw the trailer for Gears of War 4. This looks really good. Really good.
So this one is not as successful, actually. Gears of War 4, you know, Gears of War was created by Epic. They did a trilogy. It was an Xbox exclusive for the most part, although actually the first game was made on Windows as well a year or two later. And they added an extra level to it. It was actually pretty well done. But most of the games have been Xbox 360 only. They remastered the first one, I think, for Xbox One last year, I think it was, or over this past year at some point. And that came out fine. But those games got repetitive and monotonous over time. It was just the same thing over and over again. And unfortunately, Gears of War 4, it's owned by Microsoft now. There's a new studio doing it. They've renamed themselves to the Coalition, which has a game tie-in. It's beautiful looking, and the presentation's amazing. It has that same kind of immersive feel like the, you know, like Modern Warfare. But they just don't do enough with it to make it fresh. It's just the same thing, you know, over and over again. And the thing that really drives it home is there are five acts, and each of the acts has three or four levels or whatever. And in the final act, in the final level, level of two, I guess, the gameplay changes completely. And you hop in a giant mech, and all the stuff that was really hard to beat before, you can just blow it all away like it's nothing. And it's actually really fun because it's so different. And I have to wonder why they didn't do a little bit more of that. And maybe they will, you know, in subsequent games. But the cool thing about this game is it's an incredible presentation, great immersive experience. It's an Xbox Play Anywhere game. So if you buy it digitally, you can play it on Xbox One or Windows 10, and you can move back and forth.
It's out.
Just came out, yeah.
Because I saw the trailer last night.
Just came out, yeah. Today.
What is this game?
Tuesday.
Really
or yesterday
good.
Or Tuesday.
Yeah.
Tuesday was yesterday. One of those days.
Either yesterday.
It's out now.
Or the day before today.
Like I said, I can't remember. Past. Like, all I can do is look forward now.
And might as well do a Ad Duplex mobile app pick of the week.
Yeah. So,
are they back?
They never actually went away. I mean, of course, these were the guys who explained how Microsoft kind of screwed them over with the phone and everything. But they're still doing it. I mean, they're still putting out their app data information, which is very useful. And obviously, it's tough with Windows. You know, in the mobile space, there's not really a lot going on. But, you know, Speedtest by Ookla is obviously a website, but it's also an app. If you have Android or iOS, you can get this app. And actually, they just made a version for – I think the one they just made is the Windows Phone version. But you can get it now on Windows 10 and Windows Phone as a native app. Suffice to say, there wasn't a lot going on in the in the Windows mobile space this week, so as far as new apps. But anyway, it is available now, if you would like such a thing.
Well, I think that brings us to only one thing. Mary Jo Foley's Enterprise Pick of the Week.
I actually have two.
Ooh.
Whoop, whoop. So this week, Microsoft officially launched Dynamics 365, which is their ERP and CRM suite that runs on Azure. So there weren't too many surprises. I watched the launch. It was a webcast. I guess the biggest thing to take away is Dynamics 365 starts rolling out November 1st. It's going to be on the November 1st price list. The second big thing has to do with what we were talking about earlier today, which is AI. Microsoft's building all kinds of what they're calling AI and intelligence right into this suite. And the reason they're talking this up a lot is because Salesforce, their arch enemy these days, is also talking up, you know, how they're bringing intelligence to their CRM products. And one of the new things that I hadn't heard Microsoft say before is there's going to be a piece in Dynamics 365 called Customer Insights. So to me, this is more like big data analytics kind of stuff, but some people lump that under AI. And what this will let you do is, if you're a salesperson or somebody who calls on prospects, you'll be able to look at things like, when was the last time I actually called this person? Should I call them now? What was the last thing this person bought from me? So that you go in with much more intelligence about the people that you're going to be calling on as a salesperson. And you have at your fingertips a lot more data about them before you do any kind of cold calls or repeated calls on them. So it's kind of cool. It reminded me of what they've been doing with Power BI and some of the other dashboard products they have. Some of the things they've been doing with Office and Delve Analytics. It's just a nice, clean way to have all this information at your fingertips about different parts of the business and things that you should be doing proactively if you want to improve your relationships. I think there was a piece called Relationship Insights and there's Customer Insights. So yeah, kind of interesting that everybody's kind of jumping on the spam wagon right now in the CRM space. My bonus enterprise pick is about Windows Server 2016. And as of today, a few hours ago, Windows Server 2016 became generally available. So if you're somebody who's been waiting for it, which many people in my Twitter timeline have been, you can get the RTM bits on MSDN, on the Volume Licensing Service Center, or the Azure Gallery. There's a Windows Server image on the Azure Gallery. System Center 2016 is available as well today. So that you can get either both of these now if you are so inclined.
Humans are so funny because you would think a server would be the last thing you would want to, like, oh, I'm going to jump on the brand new version.
Oh, man. I'm not kidding you. Every day since Ignite, I get multiple tweets. So do you know when Windows Server is going to be available? It's still not available. Where is it? When can I get it? And I'm like, yep, you can get it today.
It's like, I guess it's for, I mean, I understand it's for testing. We all like new shiny things, yeah. But a server is something you don't want to kind of, oh, let's try the new thing, see what happens.
I know, right?
Yeah.
The reason people are excited
possibly
about
go
this.
Wrong?
Yeah, this version has a lot of stuff that the previous versions have not. Like a lot, if you're into container technology, there's the built-in containers from Microsoft and also the Hyper-V containers are part of this. Nano server. They're doing a lot of interesting things, a lot of collaborations with Docker. So people who've been waiting for those kind of things have been champing at the bit for this, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Perfect sense.
Some people care about Call of Duty. Some care about Windows Server.
That's what cracks me up. That's what makes me happy. They think of it as just like that.
It's not necessarily an either or.
You can like both.
You can.
You got to do something while the server's booting. And our code name pick of the week.
Code name pick is a code name that we first heard, I believe, at Build earlier this year, which was Project Rome. Project Rome is technology that Microsoft built on top of that Xbox smart glass technology they had a while back. And what it is kind of like a smart handoff of your apps. So that when you're moving between devices and you're on a single app, you'll be able to automatically pick up where you left off. We saw Microsoft show this a bit at Build and talk about it. But this week on the Windows blog, I believe it's just called the Windows blog these days, there's a new post about building cross-device experiences with Project Rome. And what this talks about is, with the anniversary update for Windows 10, Microsoft's starting to make this more of a reality. So if you're an app developer and you're like, yeah, that Rome thing looked kind of cool. Like I'd like it that my app could kind of move from Xbox to PC to phone to even HoloLens. You want to go read this post because they talk about something in the anniversary update that was called Remote Systems API and how that works. They give you some tips and tricks about how to build with that. And it sounds from this post like, there's going to be more about Rome coming in Redstone 2 as well. So maybe we'll hear about this on the 26th as well.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the moment you've all been waiting for. Mexican cake.
Yeah.
What?
So we're in fall beer season, finally. like all the good.
I didn't even know there was such a thing.
Oh, yeah. Every season has its own beers. And, you know, you don't want to drink a really rich, heavy imperial stout in the summer, although I do. But, you know, you don't really want to. But this beer, Westbrook Brewing's Mexican Cake, if you ever see this anywhere in bottles, on tap, you have to try this beer. It's a 10% beer. It's not light, but it's an imperial stout that's aged on vanilla beans, cocoa nibs, and cinnamon sticks. So it tastes like cake. And then you throw in a touch of habanero pepper to give it that little bit of spice. And it's really like a party in your mouth. That's all I can say. It's fantastic.
It's a party in my mouth.
It is.
It's Mexican cake. Does it really taste like Mexican cake?
It really tastes like cake. Like when you're drinking it, it's like you're having dessert.
Really?
Yeah. Is it a good taste?
It's a great taste. It depends
how you feel about Mexican cake.
I'm not being sarcastic. I mean, I've tried like donut beers that were not very good. And
oh yeah, this one's great. I know. I've heard of donut beers. I've never tried a donut beer.
Yeah, actually. I've never had a good one, and I've tried a lot of them. You know, for obvious reasons.
I do have to say, cocoa nibs, vanilla beans, cinnamon sticks,
that's pretty good stuff,
and fresh habanero peppers.
Cocoa nibs? Like those things that explode on you? Like
no.
Not squibs.
Like a Samsung Note 7? No, not like
that. Not squibs, nibs.
Cocoa squibs.
No, that sounds actually quite interesting.
It's very good. I know.
How widely available is it? Where is Westbrook?
Westbrook's in South Carolina. Okay. But I've seen the beer around, and it's in bottles, so you guys might have it on the West Coast, too. It's really, if you ever can find it, it's very much worth seeking out. The heat from the habanero is very light. It's not overdone. So you don't go away thirstier than when you started.
The heat from the habanero in the Mexican cake beer that we're discussing is light. Yes.
Now, Paul... you've heard of mole, perhaps. The original use of chocolate was, in fact, as a savory cooking item that went with peppers. And candy is a late addition to the chocolate menu. So I think this sounds really good, actually.
Yeah, it is.
It's the mole of beers.
It is. It is, indeed. It is.
Jeez.
I like that.
quite the endorsement.
Paul, I bet you would love it. Beers. I bet you would love it. You like rich imperial stout type beers. You would like this.
He seems skeptical.
He does. And we have two calendar items, too, that I added late.
Okay. Tell me all.
Right. We were talking about our travel schedule earlier. So at the end of October, Paul and I are both going to be speaking at a conference in Las Vegas called Dev Intersection, IT Edge Intersection. It's the very last week. We're going to be speaking, but so are some really big names, not just us, like Brad Anderson and Scott Guthrie and Scott Hanselman. Oh,
Mary Jo, my God, I'm sorry. Did you see this last weekend?
Yeah, I did.
Jeffrey Snover saw that it was me and you. We had pictures. And was it Mark Rozinovich probably and maybe Brad Anderson? Or no, Scott Gu and Brad Anderson.
Yeah.
And so Jeffrey Snover said, he goes, I'm appearing at this thing too. Why don't I have my picture? Then Brad Anderson actually photoshopped his face into the photo.
Oh my God.
He did.
It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. Like these two like really upper level Microsoft executives quibbling on Twitter over.
Because their picture wasn't in it.
Yeah, because their picture wasn't there.
But ours was.
There's Joe Foley.
Yep. So
there's Jeffrey. They added him at the end.
Yeah, Jeffrey Snover.
He's like the caboose.
There, of course.
Right after Richard and Brad, and before Brad.
Oh yeah, Richard and Carl will be there. All the big boys and girls. So, we're going to be speaking there, and we're probably going to have a meetup there too. We haven't worked that out yet, but last week, if you're around in Vegas or if you have not got a fully booked calendar, you should come to this conference. It should be pretty good.
Yeah. Yep.
The other conference we're speaking at is in Amsterdam, actually in Harlem. In the Netherlands.
It's just a suburb 20 minutes outside of Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Unity Connect is the conference. And Paul and I are going to be speaking there as well and doing a lot of meetups. We probably will do a share pint while we're there. Why not?
That's funny. That's a good pun. A share pint.
Hang out with the SharePoint people and drink some beer. Have a share pint.
I have to drink beer to hang out with the SharePoint people. This is perfect.
Come on. November 16th through 18th in Harlem in the Netherlands. It's Unity Connect, and it's a conference that talks a lot about SharePoint, obviously, Office 365, Exchange, Skype, Azure. There's a lot of good stuff there, too. So if you happen to be there, we're going to try to do Windows Weekly Live while we're there, if we can pull that off.
Yeah.
And some meetups.
This is not formulated or formalized, but I'd like to do maybe a smaller meetup type thing in Amsterdam if we could earlier in the week.
By the way, I love Amsterdam.
I've never been there many times
in the airport, right? Briefly last year, we got our river cruise there. But so we had a whole day. We booked a guide, and man, what a fun town! We went to a coffee shop.
Yeah, we've done two home swaps there, and
it's a group. I would love to live there for a while. I think it looks fun town.
I would too. Yeah. So I'm going to contact a friend there and try to set something up. But there's a bar at, called Elsa's that's kind of famous in Amsterdam, and I wouldn't mind doing something there if we could. So
it'd be fun.
We'll try to figure that out.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure we can do the show from there because they have their bandwidth situation is a lot better than ours.
That's what I was telling Mary Jo. I said the best bandwidth I've ever had in the whole world was in Amsterdam.
Yeah. Wow, really?
We shouldn't have any trouble getting a great connection out of there.
Nice.
It's just
the time zone will be a little tough, right?
For me, not for you, obviously. You'll have to do it during business hours, so I'll be the one getting up.
Well, it won't be business hours. It will be 8 o'clock at night.
8 o'clock at night. Oh, that's not bad. Yeah. Oh, that's my morning. That's fine. In fact, it might even be – that's Windows Weekly time if you could do it on Wednesday.
Yeah, you'll recall the shows we've done from Europe where, we start and the light is out, and then by the time we're done, it's
black. If you're at 8 p.m., we're 9 hours earlier. Oh, no. Yeah, you're 9 hours ahead of us, so this will be perfect. Yeah. That's 11 a.m. Pacific.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. And what days of the week is it? 16th through 18th November.
I think it's a Monday.
So we'll probably have to
do a swap.
We're going to inquire about whether we can get it from the show, right? In which case it probably
The 16th is a Wednesday.
Yeah. It shouldn't be a problem.
You don't even have to tell me.
It shouldn't be a problem.
I'll just turn on the thing and you'll be there.
Yeah. I don't think you'll have to do anything. Yeah. But if we're lucky, what we can do is like some live thing. And if that doesn't work out, then we'll just do it from our hotel or whatever.
Well, you do it live. It'd be fun. Yeah. Yeah. Well, talk to the Unity Connect folks.
Yeah.
It is, after all, Europe's premier technology conference.
Thank you. Exactly.
Shouldn't be too hard. Well, good. I can't wait. Vegas and Amsterdam ahead. Mm-hmm. Next week, you'll be in the normal spots, though, right?
We will. Yeah.
I'll find Mary Jo Foley at allaboutmicrosoft.com, which she propagates from her Manhattan digs. Paul Thurrott, he's in Dedham, Massachusetts, but really he's also all over the internet. Leanpub.com for his books, Thurrott.com for his writings. Become a premier member. It's merely $42. It's the best $42 I ever spent. Leo Laporte, twit. The things I do for this show.
Thank you, Leo.
Hey, we fixed your PC on the show. Come on. You did.
It was well worth it. I got my tech support. And actually, but what I'm glad to see is that actually does work. And so there are probably, I would guess, a few people in the same boat as me who were insiders. Yeah. And then once Windows came out and, they got the anniversary update, just said, okay, now I'm off the insider program. So that script works. At least it worked for me. Mm-hmm. Good to know about. And you could find it by searching, what was it? Windows Borked Update. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. You can watch live at twit.tv. If you do that, go on in the chat room, too, and you can kibitz live at irc.twit.tv. But, you don't have to do any of that. You can be in studios. Chris Brown from Windsor, California, came down. He wanted to see what you guys looked like in person, and he's still uneducated.
I just wanted to meet Chris Brown. So
yeah, no, I know. It's a mutual thing, yeah. You just email tickets at twit.tv and we'll put out a little chair for you and a small lunch and supplies so that you could survive the long trek that is Windows Weekly. If you can't be here in person or on the internet, please subscribe. You'll get every issue if you go to your favorite podcasting client. Search for Windows Weekly. Get it every week. Thanks, everybody. Thanks again to Father Robert and Megan Maroney, who filled in for me over the last 3 weeks. I have no plans ever to leave again. I'm staying right here.
I can't believe you came back. I think that's one of the big problems when you take such a big trip like that. Like, getting back to work is the worst.
Yeah. Well, you don't really, you work when you travel. You're still writing.
That's why. Because when I've taken time off,
you don't want to
take
real time
off. It's not just the week or two I'm gone or whatever. Yeah. It's the slow roll, getting back up to speed. It's just not worth it.
You know, it's funny. I could do this show in my sleep, and I pretty much was for the first few days back, given jet lag.
Yep.
And it, you know, sure. it's in my blood, I think.
Yeah.
I've been doing this so long. And I love it. You know what happens? I read the tech news.
Doing this.
Maybe I can make a business out of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I read the tech news and I go, I wonder what Paul and Mary Jo would say about this. And then I make up in my mind. I have a conversation with you in my head.
Yeah. Like, no, I think we all do something very similar to that. My reactions are usually a little more violent. I'll read the tech news and be like, what?
It was an interesting time to be away from the U.S. because I missed the first debate. I actually got up at 4 a.m.
Oh, wow.
And I was using T-Mobile. I had Google Fi phone and I had a T-Mobile iPhone. And T-Mobile was working great all over Europe. And even though we were at sea, we were close enough to the coast, I was still getting 3G.
Oh, because they've changed T-Mobile. Now you get full speed. Yeah.
Now, they said that's just the summer. Then they extended it for the fall. And I don't know how. I have a feeling this is just forever. But it is. And it's, you know, no cost.
This is changing everything for people to travel internationally.
It's a revelation.
Yeah. It's amazing.
For traveling. Because you really do want data when you travel. And the fact that I'm lying in a boat at sea with no... By the way, the boat's internet was terrible as usual. Sure. But I'm getting 3G from the coast 20 miles away and able to listen to the debate. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it changes everything.
Every sniff came through crystal clear.
I saved thousands of dollars by not paying for data.
Absolutely.
I really need to hear that.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of travel. On the one hand... And then I remember when I was a kid going to Europe, and you didn't know what was going on. You'd get baseball scores 3 days later.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, how did the Red Sox do?
The New York Times from 3 days ago.
Yeah. Remember the Herald Tribune?
Yeah, the Herald Tribune.
International Herald Tribune was a paper for people overseas. It was the only way you knew what was going on. And they didn't have Coca-Cola. They had weird variations. I remember something called Afri-Cola. And it had cinnamon in the bottom. You know, you'd pour it out, and then there'd be cinnamon dregs. And it's like, I don't think there's cinnamon in Coca-Cola.
Like the Mexican cake beer.
Yes, very much like
that. It's the mole of beer.
It's the mole of beer. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.